It's a very difficult one to answer because, again, he's been so endlessly fascinating to historians. So I forget the exact figures, but there's something like 90 biographies of Bismarck written by the time he dies in 1898. There's 300 and something by the early 1900s. So almost immediately, historians are sort of writing about him, particularly in Germany. His reputation has been rather mixed over time. He's a bit like Marmite. Historians either sort of love him or hate him, or at least many have a kind of grudging respect for him. And I think whatever you think about him, there is that political skill, and you have to acknowledge that he is a towering figure in 19th century European politics and German politics. I don't think Germany would have unified in the way it did when it did without Bismarck. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on where you fall down on Bismarck's legacy. He's been seen in various ways. So one way in which he's been interpreted basically is the root of a lot of Germany's later problems. So many historians, particularly outside Germany, were not, in the late 20th century or the mid-20th century, were not sort of shy about drawing links between Bismarck and the kind of Germany he creates and Hitler and the Third Reich, for example. I think to a certain extent, or my own personal view is that to a great extent, such comparisons are sort of over-egging things. But certainly there are trends within German politics, sort of an authoritarian trend, the idea of sort of looking up to a strong leader, etc., you can interpret as having their root in the Bismarckian Reich. I think there are more positive developments as well. I sort of talked about very briefly the fact that Imperial Germany is a lot more democratic than it's often given credit for. I think one of the things you get because of that really liberal electoral franchise, which Bismarck himself later regrets, but one of the consequences of that is you get, during the imperial period, the emergence of mass politics in Germany in a way that hadn't happened before, and Germans are used to contesting elections. Germans really engaged with the political process because of that. So a lot of the recent historiography has suggested that Imperial Germany is a lot more sort of democratic, a lot more of a pluralistic and contested political atmosphere than sort of the older narratives that see it as a sort of a military monarchy, an authoritarian, very top-down kind of politics. I think more broadly, sort of Bismarck's legacy in Europe, you can see that in foreign affairs, and I suspect we'll come on to what this means. But Bismarck had very effectively juggled a system of alliances that had kept the peace in Europe for 20, 30 odd years since the 1870s. He'd been very keen after 1871 to demonstrate to the rest of Europe that Germany hadn't any more ambitions, that Germany wasn't going to, you know, fight wars left, right and centre, didn't want to expand any further. And he'd run this system of alliances whereby, in order to give Germany space to consolidate after 1871, France had been kept isolated and Germany had essentially been in part of a bloc of three out of the five great powers at all times. And it is partly because of Bismarck's diplomatic skill that he can keep all these plates spinning, that he can keep on top of that. What happens after Bismarck goes is there's no one really who is skillful enough, has the political nous or the will even to keep that going. And so that system of alliances sort of solidifies into what you get by the early 1900s, essentially two blocks of alliances eyeing each other suspiciously, which is often seen as one of the key factors in the slide towards the First World War in 1914. So Bismarck, you know, I think his abilities as a politician, his abilities as a foreign minister are as important as what he does. His role as a European statesman, I think, is as important as what he does domestically as well.